Welcome back. Phil Vickery's so sweet, I can't believe I don't have diabetes by hanging out with him.
Vickery can't go out when it's hot in the summertime. He might melt.
That's right. Hi, Bill.
I tell you.
How are you, buddy? So good to have you. Justin Akery, Matt Stell, Phil Vickery in the Fury Electric Studios. Feels like a Friday to me, but it's not. Mostly because Bill is here, I suppose.
Right. What is it?
And tomorrow we're playing golf.
Where are you tomorrow?
We are in Bryant at the at Hurricane.
Uh-oh.
And it's for the Boys and Girls Club of Saline County. One of my favorite counties of all
Who's
time.
Who's out there with you tomorrow?
The Pigskin Preacher will be with me.
Get out of here. Love that guy.
He is. A couple of emails here. This guy says, Gandolfini, great in the taking of Pelham 123. Didn't see it.
That was the remake.
He was the mayor of New York, for Pete's sake.
Not the original.
Same guy says, in regards to the last three by Danny Green in the game the other night, Van Gundy said it best. That was a foul in the first quarter, but not now. Love the NBA, but hate that part of it. Yes, I am a self-proclaimed Heat LeBron hater. I still don't think it was a foul. There was some incidental body contact, but he did have all ball.
Yeah.
Interesting when you get out that far, because when you foul beyond the three-point line, there's just two people involved. There's not a scrum. It's not like somebody going to the bucket where everybody's got hands in the way or a kneecap or something like that. It's a one-on-one thing, and I think anytime you get that much elevation, two guys going at one another, there's an anticipation to call a foul.
Mm-hmm. There is that.
Yeah.
And then people are talking about how Ginobili got molested on the last play, but he did take 13 steps, so it all balances out.
I get,
Hard in the NBA to close out a championship series with a foul shot with no time left.
Look, they had 2 5-foot putts to clinch the game and close it out, and it couldn't be won by there was no chance for the Heat to win. Because if you're up 2 possessions, it's over. Guess what? Then those people who walked out felt good about the walkout. Instead, they're beating on the doors trying to get back in. But they didn't make their 5-foot putts that you have to make, and they blew it.
I actually thought when Ginobili caught it, and who was running it? Was it Bosch? It was Bosch that was running at him, right? I thought he was going to head fake because he had time for the catch. A pump.
Are you talking about the corner three?
The corner three.
At Danny Green.
Was it Green?
I thought he was going to head fake.
Yeah, it was Danny Green.
I thought he was going to head
pump fake because there was 1.9 seconds. You'd have thought
he could have pulled that. Bosch is into his butt. Then you can't not call that. Then it's a blatant foul, and you got 3 free throws to win the game.
But you don't want to be. You don't want those free throws. You want to shoot it and make it. It's sort of like Sergio at Sawgrass a few weeks ago. He's like, man, there is no way I want to go into a playoff with this dude. So I'm gonna either win or lose it right here. I'm gonna try to hit. I'm gonna hunt for that impossible to hunt stick on 17, and I'm either gonna knock it in the water and lose, or I'm gonna get it close and I'm gonna make birdie and I'm gonna win this thing in regulation because I do not want to go to a playoff with Tiger Woods. Yeah. That was the situation the other day. So it's like, you know, you don't want to go to the free throw line and try to make 3 free throws. You saw how nerve-wracking it is. They had 2 guys blow it.
But he didn't need to make all 3, though. You know, I mean, you pump, and then you got...
That would have been sweet if he, like, pumped and ducked down and Bosch went flying over and kicked him and
fouled him. That would have been awesome.
That would have been neat.
Well, that would have been special.
You'd have been cool.
Jeez, Chris Farley. I was going to say, Chris Farley interviewing Paul McCartney.
You remember when...
Did you see the Terminator?
You shot that 3? It was awesome.
You'd have been really cool to be able to jump from the 3-point line and dunk it.
You know what would be really cool is if Joey Crawford is not officiating tonight. That would be great.
Yeah, you know, there is no justice in the world. It's like watching Game of Thrones. All the good people keep dying and all the bad people keep living on. You know what? James Gandolfini, I wake up this morning, he's dead, and Joey Crawford's running around the earth still. What's right about that?
Is it because he's bald? Is that why you don't like Joey Crawford? Or is it because of the over-exaggerated 72 hops when he's calling a block or whatever? You watch him.
I don't like it because he's poor. He's a poor official. He doesn't do a good job at his profession.
He seems inconsistent, and he's touted as, like, the gold standard.
No, I think he consistently blows, and so I appreciate his consistency. He's always not good.
Yeah. It's a crapshoot with him because – and I don't know. I mean, I get it that he's tenured and – you know, to criticize officials is an easy thing to do when your team you want to win loses. But to me, every time I see Joey Crawford on a baseline or something like that, I immediately have negative feelings.
Here's my deal. 10 million Americans can't be wrong. Everybody knows this guy's a hack, and he continues to get to do his job. It's very, very offensive to me.
I don't know. I feel like...
Name another official in the NBA, right?
I don't know anybody else.
That's just it.
Dick Bavetta.
And that's going old school, too.
He's dead, right?
Bavetta's 7,000 years old.
Did he retire?
7,000.
He's done.
Steve Jabby's doing the sideline stuff.
Yeah, I knew Jabby. I didn't like Jabby that much either. Mostly because I thought he was kind of, here's, I don't like
a little
guys.
Too much style. To
yeah,
him.
He's got a little too much grease in his hair. The thing about Jabby was, I didn't think he was a bad official, but he seemed a little too cantankerous to be an official. You can't, and I understand, it's like guys who, if you're constantly getting negative feedback all the time from players and fans, I'm sure it wears on you. Mm-hmm. But as an official, you know what you're getting into, and you're being paid a large sum of money to take that abuse.
And the NBA is, it's hard. It's like we were talking about the stopping the clock with that 5 seconds to go. It's such a dynamic game. It doesn't allow for second guessing a lot of ways. So you do have to rely on some instincts. I mean, I get that, but at the same time, it just seems so wildly inconsistent. And I guess that's my big problem with it.
Well, it's a fast game, obviously. I mean, I've tried to do play-by-play on high school girls basketball. And it's difficult. I cannot imagine trying to referee an NBA game. It is so quick.
You can't. It is. It is that. And you got three guys. And for the most part, I think, you know, you got NBA officials are pretty consistent. They know if you're going to call an over the back, you're always going to call an over the back. And so that's, you kind of pray for consistency when you're playing in these games and you're coaching in these games because you know what you're going to get too. They have the emphasis on flopping, if you notice. I think they've really taken that out of this whole series. And it's become a little more of a physical series as a result of that.
Yeah, Ginobili elbowed LeBron in the neck the other day. That was interesting. But hey, if you're going to stop a freight train, you got to try to derail it, right?
Regular season, that's a flagrant one, probably.
And the thing we don't think about, when you play a seven-game series with all the pressure that is on each one of these games against two very, very good teams playing at a high level, everybody wanting to win, there's a familiarity that builds up. Grudges are carried over until the next game. I mean, you know this guy, you know, jacked me last night in the jaw and got away with it. That doesn't happen during the regular season because you move on to another city. Yeah, maybe you got that in the back of your mind the next time you play. But I'm surprised that there's not more. I mean, you go back to the 80s. You remember those? The Pistons and Celtics and Lakers, they would clear the benches.
It's a different game now.
Nobody would get fined, too, by the way. You remember that Rambis and McHale or whatever? They're in a fight, cleared the benches.
Well, I mean, Rudy Tomjanovich almost got killed during a melee one time. So
Yeah.
Man, it's something bitter in my mouth. That must be blood. No, that's spinal fluid. Yeah. Uh-oh. True story. That's a true story. Yeah, that's bad.
Kermit Washington,
Yes, Rudy T.
Those were the days.
God bless him. Yeah, the NBA just ain't what it used to be.
No.
But that was, anytime Rick Roby came off the bench for the Celtics, there's three quick, hard fouls on Kareem.
Are you talking about the
Worthy.
Old Dolphins punter?
Yeah, not Reggie.
Okay.
Who would wear a watch?
Einhorn is Finkel.
Finkel is Einhorn.
Einhorn's
a man.
Bill Laimbeer got two fouls in Game 6 last night. That's how many fouls he has left over. Like, But at the same time, look at Kevin McHale and look at LeBron James, you know, as far as, like, that position. You know, I know McHale played a lot of center, but you can't have these people fighting that way anymore. It's the same thing with the NFL and these safeties, you know. Like, Atwater was amazing, blow people up. But if you send some of these people across the middle, I mean, they're 6 foot 220. Yeah. I mean, they're going to kill somebody. Yeah. I guess that.
Speaking of old
weaponized.
School.
Weaponized.
Old school versus new school. Let's go to football if we might. If you're just tuning in, Justin Akery joined in the Fury Electric studio by Matt Stell, Bill Vickery, who continually checks his BlackBerry no matter what he's doing.
Finger on the pulse.
Man, you know, got to rub a couple nickels together.
When you were in,
I ain't making no paper on this program.
When you was recently in wine country, were you checking your BlackBerry as you were sipping an Opus?
No.
Okay.
No.
Just asking.
I was not. Okay. That was a different situation, though.
Well, let's go to wine country then.
It was to the grindstone here, my friend.
AL.com reported Monday that Bielema, a former member of the NCAA's Football Rules Committee, proposed a rules change that would create a 15-second substitution period after each first down to allow defenses to substitute. At the recent SEC spring meetings, Bielema framed it as a player safety issue. It is similar to the argument that's been made by one Nick Saban, two guys that have not exactly seen eye to eye. Both guys, old school, run the ball first, play great defense. Both guys against the up-tempo, new-age offenses that are being played all over the country. Mm-hmm. Thoughts?
How do you do that?
Yeah, like, I know why they want to do it, because the only way that some of these teams, like, okay, so Manziel, you know, he's amazing. They still, with the most dynamic quarterback last year, they have a puncher's chance against Alabama. So if you can't run a hurry-up offense with him,
right.
I mean, it just slows the game and it benefits the defense. And I mean, I'm not saying I'm for or against it, you know, but it seems to me that that would benefit a team like Alabama who plays the best defense with the best players all the time.
Yeah, they make situational substitutions based on down and distance all the time. Yep. So you've got your third down crew in, third and short or third and long. Now it's first down. You want the opportunity to turn your defense over and put your first down crew in. You can see how you want that.
Get your third string five-star interior lineman back in so that nobody has to break a sweat.
Yeah, well, right. Yeah. Yeah, because then the poor offensive – but how do you
defensive
do that?
Line, I meant.
How do you do that, though? How do you stop the game for 15 seconds?
He's quoted on AL.com saying there's a lot of truth that the way offensive philosophies are driven now, there's times when you can't get a defensive substitution for 8, 10, 12 play drives. That has an effect on the safety of the student-athlete, especially the bigger defensive lineman. That is really real. Saban said, in the wake of his team's struggles with Hugh Freeze's up-tempo Ole Miss offense in 2012, I guess I missed that, the defenders have a much greater chance of getting hurt in the late stages of a long no-huddle offense, calling it also an issue of fairness and asking, is this what we want football to be? I do find it hard to believe that you can't get a sub in and out, even in like a 6-7 second period.
Well, but what I've always thought, when you play those, look, the Chip Kelly offense at Oregon or what Hugh Freeze has done over there, I like it because it gives teams that they don't have the talent level that an Alabama would have to simply, to Matt's point, yeah, okay, substitute. So we put another five-star defensive tackle in to pound on the offensive lineman. So that Ole Miss offensive lineman, who's pretty good, you know, has played against three different five-star guys the entire game. He's played the entire game. Now it's the fourth quarter, and they're trying to run the ball to win the game, and he's, you know, dead on his feet trying to block another five-star who's back in there. So I like the offenses, and I like the schemes. It makes for to some marginal degree of parity in the game. I like it. I think they're using an argument to try to change the game to their benefit.
I agree with you. I would also say that there were probably a lot of college coaches in basketball in the mid-90s screaming that you shouldn't be allowed to play full-court defense because Arkansas was doing it too well.
Yeah, at what point does – I mean, student-athlete health and safety is paramount, but at what –
No, it isn't.
At what – well, we –
Two things people don't care about, safety and academics.
Yeah.
We've proven that over and over
again. Exactly.
Well, but anyway. But the coaches need to be worried about it, though.
At what point is being tired a safety hazard? You know what I mean? Framing it that way – I don't know. Perhaps it is, but how big of a safety concern is it?
It is a lot harder to
defend. They still let Jadeveon Clowney play. That's a safety
issue. Right, I mean, exactly.
What's harder to defend, an up-tempo offense or this argument by these coaches?
See, I think instead of what happens is this. So you're playing an up-tempo offense. It forces you to maybe gamble earlier in the series, meaning first and second downs, to try to get that because – it's all based on number of plays. Hugh Freeze, Chip Kelly when he was at Oregon, those guys, they're trying to run 100 plays a game, knowing that ultimately will prove to their advantage. But if you stop them on a three and out real quickly and you get the ball back, march 62 yards in 5 minutes, then you've taken 10 plays off their board easily. So you use your defense and your plodding offense to dictate to that other team what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I guess if the argument that it's the condition of the student athlete, okay, then when Alabama marches the ball down the field, I mean,
right?
I'm going to say that probably that the other defense is pretty tired as well, even though it's not a quote unquote up tempo offense. You know, who's more tired? I don't know why one would be more tired than the other.
Shouldn't Georgia have gotten the opportunity to rest for 15 seconds after each play against Barrett Jones and that Alabama offensive line in the SEC championship game? Great.
That's way more exhausting, trying to defend that Alabama running game than trying to defend these passing attacks.
Well, because those poor defense. I mean, that offensive line was just road graders.
Well, they apparently were not tired. I mean, Barrett Jones had enough energy to beat up his own quarterback at one point.
That was the best.
And poor Notre Dame. I mean, you could just see the difference. I mean, that game was a brutal. That would have been dads. If that was a boys' club game, dads would have rushed out on the field, pulled their kids off of it. You know, yelled at the other coaches. and taking their kids home.
To back up your argument, Hugh Freeze, who we know which side of the argument he comes down on, says if the offense doesn't sub, the defense shouldn't sub. That's the way the rules are. Offensive players are playing too. Same number of snaps. Are they in danger also? They're having to play the same number of plays. And then if I was Bielema or if I was Saban, I'd come out and say, yes, and I'm worried about your kid's safety too, even if you aren't. I play that card. Smart.
Yeah, Hugh Freeze brings a valid point to the table.
Yeah.
Yeah, let me tell you something. I'm a little worried about what's going on over there. And if you're an SEC West fan, you ought to be too. There is quite a love affair over there.
No.
You don't think so?
No. You can't churn enough talent through there to consistently win.
Just had an awfully good recruiting class, including the number one player in the country.
We'll see where they end up in 4 years. You can't churn enough talent at Ole Miss to win consistently.
Well, he may be hired at Texas before that ever comes about, so
maybe.
We'll see.
I mean, you never know.
We've got to get Nick
Saban. I know that's his dream job was to be there.
We've got to get Nick Saban a new job.
But, you know, that's just it. It's not about who coaches at, you know, any of our schools. It's getting that guy into Austin, Texas.
Joe Klein at 12:30 today. He got tied up, so we're going to get him at 12:30. If you want to talk some more NBA, we'll have that opportunity. I'm going to give Bill Vickery some time to do whatever he wants to do and preview Sunday's show coming up. Before
There's
I get into
no
this,
preview for the show.
Some of the things Bill gets into on Sunday involves taxes and spending and the hardships of the average American.
Right.
There's a story on the Wall Street Journal, which I'm sure you're shocked that I read Wall Street Journal
online.
I am
a little shocked. Let me ask you this. Did you accidentally, and I respect you and I respect your intelligence, but did you accidentally go to the Wall Street Journal website today? Was that in between? I said that with a straight face.
With all due respect. I said with all due respect.
Mr. Dennett.
Yes. Hey, Geneva Convention. Take it easy over there.
In between TMZ and Gawker, did you accidentally go to?
Well, obviously, Wall Street is alphabetically last, so yeah, it comes at the end.
Okay.
Anyway, I digress.
Yes.
The headline by Rachel Bachman says, "Downside of SEC football: hotel price hikes." Then there's this really interesting graph they have here that I can't read. This is not for you. This is for the average football fan.
Right.
While you may have a blue collar on literally today, I wouldn't necessarily call you a blue collar guy. You may have been raised that way, but now
I came from that. Yes.
You're a white collar fella.
Very humble beginnings.
So did James Gandolfini.
Yes.
You know, his parents were Italian immigrants. It's going to be hot. It's going to be so hot down there.
Paulie, you and Chrissy. You go get the car.
Ooh.
We're talking about too soon.
Matty T is cutting his eyes at you. Yeah, apparently so.
Too quickly?
I mean, could you wait till the guy's cold,
for
goodness sakes?
That's what he did. That's a scene with Gandolfini right there.
Okay. I'll give you guys one guess and one guess only. Which college city in the SEC has the greatest price hike on Saturday football hotel rooms? Which town? Which town only?
I know.
You have one guess and one guess only. Come on.
Tuscaloosa.
That's very good. They raised their rates 144%.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me. The Wall Street Journal is worried about SEC football costs, but that's interesting. Auburn is second, which is really a ripoff. 120% increase. A&M is third, 89%. By the way, if you want to weigh in on Manziel, feel free. Florida, 80%. Ole Miss, 72%. Arkansas fans, we're getting a veritable bargain. Mississippi State is up 50%.
They should lower their hood. I'm sorry, Michael Marion. I'm sorry. I love you.
Tupelo honey. Georgia is about 50%. I think Mississippi State is 56, actually, and 51 for Georgia. Arkansas is 48% is the average price hike. And the average room for Saturday in Fayetteville, just over $100. So not terribly bad.
Nothing.
Are not those stats just a function of supply and demand with the motels available in the
Arkansas? Fayetteville does need about three more hotels, I think.
You think so?
I think so.
Well, I mean, I'm just making the argument that evidently they don't need it near as bad as Auburn, Alabama does. Because, you know what I'm saying? Like
They also have a stadium that's a little bit larger. I mean, if you have a stadium that seats 100,000 or 90,000 or whatever.
Can you keep a motel open with five full days a year?
If
you know what I mean?
If you raise the rates 144% every time there's a game, you can help yourself a lot.
Evidently.
Four night minimum.
And you have to look at the proximity to other business in that Walmart, Tyson, Hunt, all those companies up there keep those hotels that have been. I mean, there's a reason that all that new construction north of Fayetteville has occurred, and a lot of it's hotels because a lot of business is going on, a lot of people traveling in and out. So those hotels have an ability to be profitable, but if Who goes to Tuscaloosa, Alabama, if you're not going to go to a football
game? Oh, you're out of your mind.
Who goes to Auburn?
I go there all the time.
Exactly.
Just to kick it.
It's
I had no idea until last year, because I had not been before, but UCA opened against Ole Miss last year. I had no clue how remote Oxford is.
Oxford is, yeah.
It is in the middle of nowhere.
Well, I sure do like it when I get there.
Yeah, I was going to say, there are sights to see.
I had so where game day dress was written?
A bartender buddy of mine.
I wouldn't know.
A bartender buddy of mine was telling me this. I'm just repeating this. I don't have a dog in the fight, he said. Yeah, man, you want to know why the girls here are so pretty? I said, yes, I do. He said, because we get the ones that can't get into Georgia and Texas. They just come right to the middle. I love Oxford, though.
Oh, yeah, that's a great town,
I got lots of friends there in Mississippi. I'm pro-Mississippi. My mother was born there.
There we go.
DH in Pensacola, does Fayetteville still require a two-night minimum? I'm not sure about that. That's a good question. Anyone?
I don't know.
Yeah, no.
Okay. I've actually been fortunate enough to have a place to stay up there with friends the last few years, so I haven't
You couch it?
No, there's usually an extra bedroom, but I'm not above it. I'll sleep on an air mattress. I've been known to.
How about a 2001 15-passenger Econoline van? Your name on it, brother.
There you can
roll up there with me, both of y'all. I got room for a hanging clothes.
Can I have my own bench?
Yeah, you get your own bench. Come on now.
Okay. I was going to say, does Matt have a girlfriend? You have a girlfriend?
Yeah, but no, nobody put up with my mess.
Oh, Justin. I'm so riding with him somewhere. I'm going to stand here and see what crumbs fall off the table.
You're going to ride a talented young man's coattails. You can do worse than Matt Stowe.
I'm getting my hooks in big time right now.
Shit, I'm hitching my wagon to the victory train.
No. You listen, I'll pay, but you gotta perform, okay? Wait, that came out wrong.
I was just going to say.
Let me restate
that. Boy, if I had a nickel for every time Bill Vickery uttered that phrase. Normally it's not to a man, admittedly, but still.
I rephrase that?
I don't
will pay, but you got
to
perform. No pressure, honey. James Gandolfini, God rest his soul, 51 years of age. It came far too soon. A proud Italian-American. Parents came over on the boat. And his dad was like, I can't remember what he said his dad was, but he had his mother and his father both had, fairly menial jobs. This guy, but they busted their butts so he could go to college. He went to Rutgers.
Mm-hmm.
And
sort of a college.
Made something of
quite a success.
Sort of a school.
Made something, did something special. That's great.
Interesting fact that I read this week. I was reading an interview with Brad Pitt, who's a Missouri native, Springfield.
Springfield,
yeah. He is like one class or maybe one test. He was that close to his degree. And he just said, I'm going to go act.
I'm going to go be awesome looking. Over here with all these awesome.
He was a bit of a stoner, and he had like one class left, and just like walked out. He was that close to graduating from Missouri, and just like, I'm good.
Can you imagine him in Columbia, Missouri? Back when he was even young.
Lost his headband. Mike Miller lost a shoe, and sinks a three-pointer. Danny Green made only one three after saving the three-point record in the finals previously held by Ray Allen.